Dornofsky is the executive director of the Center for Genetics and Society. She is very sorry that she's not able to be here today, but she asked me if I would deliver her talk, and I will tell you that I am not a great expert in this area, but I'm going to try to do her justice. So I want to start with the fact that every country that has ever considered whether we should be modifying human genes has voted no. We have not done this in the United States, but that's about hung up on abortion, and we won't talk about that. I don't know if you've all seen the movie Gattaca. So what this is, permanently changing people's genetic makeup. Or read The Handmaid's Tale, take your pick. The Council of Europe Convention on Human Rights and Biomedicine is a binding treaty that all the EU countries have signed that prohibits it. This is about designer babies. This is about, do we want to genetically modify babies in a way that will continue on into future generations? This was the cover of the MIT Technology Review, and there's a lot of conversation about, you know, is this something we should be even thinking about? And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. So I just want to kind of talk for a second about mitochondrial. I'm going to talk about mitochondrial replacement, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about gene editing, both new systems, new processes to change our genes. Some people have said mitochondrial replacement is like changing the battery in your flashlight, which would suggest that mitochondria actually plays no role in who we are. So this is very inaccurate. The FDA calls it mitochondrial manipulation. It's a little bit better. Some people talk about three-parent babies, or three-person IVF. The technical term, which is just an unmanageable term, is nuclear genome transfer. So I asked myself, what are mitochondria and why are we talking about them? So the mitochondria, usually when we talk about DNA, we talk about genetics, we talk about cells, we talk about nucleuses, where our DNA is really, our genetic material is. But mitochondria is the energizer in all living cells, plants and animals. And mitochondria plays an enormous role in evolution, survival of the fittest, how we change over time. And so it's really very, very important. And failures of mitochondria are either inherited, which is what we're going to talk about, or spontaneous. There are mitochondrial diseases that affect people, usually older people, and they can be very mild or they can be devastating. And I know that we're going to hear more about that, so I'm not going to talk very much about that. And this is just to show you kind of what biology 101. So you have a fertilized egg. So you already have a sperm and an egg. So you have two people. And then you have another donor. And what we're doing is we're taking the nucleus out of the egg of the cell that has the unhealthy mitochondria, and we're going to replace it with healthy mitochondria. So that's how we get three people. So we're putting this all together. You have the egg and the sperm over here, and you have the mitochondria from the third person, and it all comes together. Why are we doing this? Well, we're doing it because there are some rare mitochondrial diseases that, you know, can have very devastating effects. This has been championed in the UK, where they say there's very, very few candidates, but still those people care. You know, it's like when we talk about orphan diseases. Those people care, obviously, very much about their children not being born with that. What's a little scary is that there's a researcher in the United States who wants permission to do this technique for age-related infertility. And there's like no research, but they want to do it anyway. And this is how people talk about it. And it's true. It is tragic. It's terrible when somebody has, a devastating disease. But I also want to call out the idea that eugenics need not be a dirty word. And something I think that, the history of eugenics in this country and in other countries, that quote is really very troubling. Also want to just point out, though, that this is not a medical treatment in the usual sense of the word, because it is preventing a person from being born with it. It's not treating people who have it. There are warnings in literature. First of all, nuclear transfer by itself, we're creating this third thing, can cause epigenetic harms. There can be a mismatch between the mitochondria and the nucleus that can cause harm. And it does impact traits. So it is not the battery in your flashlight. It really is having an effect on who you are. The research so far is very limited in terms of any long-term studies. They haven't been able to do this for very long. There is some research in macaques, but they only went up to 3 years old, so we don't actually know very much. So they started doing it last week in the UK. Now, the UK, unlike the United States, is not the Wild West of fertility treatments. They have a highly regulated system, and so they will be regulating which clinics are able to do that. There were a lot of concerns raised about that there are no clinical trials, and there's no follow-up being required. And the Parliament had to vote because there's a treaty and there's a law in the UK that says no germline modification. So they created an exception for this. So the FDA is starting to look at this. There was a two-day meeting in February, and they have the conclusions from that meeting. If I can quote the committee chair, Evan Snyder, who is a researcher in California, said, "The sense of the committee was that there is not enough data, either in animals or in vitro, to move on to humans. And these concerns involve both the preclinical data and even the basic science." So there are a lot of concerns about this kind of mad rush to modify our genes. But what the FDA did do is commission an IOM study to really look at what are the social implications, what are the ethical implications. Is this the new genetics? Is this preventing disease? How do we even want to think about this before we allow researchers to move forward? And then the other thing I want to talk quickly about is gene editing. So gene editing is a process that is actually probably more accurate than three-person IVF. And the technique is called CRISPR, which I can never memorize, clustered, regularly interspaced, short, palindromic repeats. Madam, I'm Adam. And it is snippets of DNA that read the same forward and backwards. And so this is a new way of trying to modify our genes. And there's a lot of controversy. The major scientific journals and magazines, Science, Nature, have had articles and editorials back and forth. There's a group of researchers who say this is the way to move forward. However, they also proposed a moratorium on clinical uses and much more research and some kind of public dialogue. So they say, yes, we should move in this direction, but we need to do it cautiously. Then on the other side, we have the argument that we just don't want to go there. This is not the place to go. And this editorial was written by another group of scientists, including the CEO of a biotech company who is developing some gene editing technology, but says, we need to slow down. And genetic enhancement, we're back. I'm really going to plug Gattaca. It's a good movie. You should watch it again. Okay, why don't we want to do this? For some of us, it's intuitive that eugenics and, you know, messing with our genes is a bad thing. But really, from a scientific, from a, you know, evidence-based, why do we not want to do this? Well, one thing we need to be worried about are what are the risks to the children born and future generations. We have absolutely no evidence and no science to let us know what happens to the next child, the next generation born. And then there's the question, do we need it? There are, you know, PGD, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, pretty good screening techniques that are improved all the time. Just because we can do it, do we need to do it, and should we do it? And then really the eugenics. I mean, is this not the doorway to eugenics? And deciding what traits are favorable, what traits are not favorable, who is favorable, who's not favorable. I will quote one of my heroes, Dorothy Roberts, who says that the way a society looks at reproduction tells you how it values people. And please go to the CGS website. And Marcy thanks you. Mm-hmm.